Joining Albina at the long wooden desks was her little sister, Amelia, whom everyone called Molly. She seemed to have found her calling at the studio, being unusually productive. A foot taller than Albina, she was a sociable 19-year-old with a broad face and bouffant brown hair, often seen laughing with her colleagues. She got on particularly well with another newcomer, Eleanor Eckert, nicknamed Ella. The two were as thick as thieves. Ella was popular and good-looking, with blonde, slightly frizzy hair and a wide smile. A sense of fun was never far from her, whether she was at work or play. The girls would socialise and eat lunch together, barely stopping work as they shared food across the crowded desks. The company also organised social events. Picnics were a favourite. The dial painters, dressed in white summer dresses and wide-brimmed hats, would eat ice cream cones while sitting on the narrow makeshift bridge that lay across the brook by the studio, swinging their legs or holding on to one another as they tried not to fall in the water. The picnics were for all employees, so at these events the girls got to mix with their co-workers, whom they rarely saw, the men who worked in the laboratories and refining rooms. It wasn't long before the odd office romance began. May Cubberly started walking out with Ray Canfield, a lab worker, one of many blossoming relationships among the girls, though most were not with colleagues. Hazel Vincent, for one, was in love with her childhood sweetheart, a mechanic called Theodore Kuza, who had baby blue eyes and fair hair. The company's founder, Sabin von Sortsky, an Austrian-born 34-year-old doctor, could often be seen holding court at these picnics, sat among his workers on a rug, his jacket off and a beaker of cold drink in one hand. The girls seldom saw him in their studio. He was usually too busy working in his lab to grace them with his presence, so it was a rare opportunity for their paths to cross. It was he who had invented the luminous paint they used back in 1913, and it had certainly been a success for him. In his first year, he had sold 2,000 luminous watches. Now, the company's output ranked in the millions. In many ways, he was an unlikely entrepreneur, for his training had been in medicine. Initially, he'd intended the paint to be a potboiler to fund medical research, but the growing demand had necessitated a more business-like approach. He had met a kindred soul in Dr. George Willis, and the two physicians had founded the company. Von Sochotsky was, according to his colleagues, a remarkable man. Everyone called him simply the doctor. He was indefatigable, someone that liked to start late, but is then willing to go on and on until all hours. American magazine called him one of the greatest authorities in the world on the subject of radium, and he had studied under the best, the Curies themselves. From them, and from the specialist medical literature he had studied, von Sochotsky understood that radium carried great dangers. Around the time he studied with the Curies, Pierre was heard to remark that he would not care to trust himself in a room with a kilo of pure radium, as it would burn all the skin off his body, destroy his eyesight, and probably kill him. The Curies, by that time, were intimately familiar with radium's hazards, having suffered many burns themselves. Radium could cure tumours, it was true, by destroying unhealthy tissue. But it was indiscriminating in its powers and could devastate healthy tissue too. Von Sochotsky himself had suffered its silent and sinister wrath. Radium had got into his left index finger and, when he realised, he hacked the tip of it off. It now looked as though an animal had gnawed it.